You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 22nd February. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kuntz, I want to touch on the markets. Sibanye Truworths traded weaker after the result. I want to get Nick's thought on that. Am I overly worried? And just, you know what, they did great since the updates. Henry Biddlecombe, that war that Australia is having with Facebook and Google, how's that playing out? Is there risks? I mean, Google's throwing money at the problem, but then, man, Google has money to throw. Friday's poll was, we asked you about your expectations for the budget, which is coming up on Wednesday. Three options. 23 of you said tough but decent. That was where I would have fallen. 74% said a horror show. I don't know. And Treasury's fine, an extra $100 billion. Of course, the trick with these is it's one thing to make promises. We need delivery. And 3% of you are deeply confident and said it's going to be great. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: Time Bank tiptoes into lending. So the deal is that at the right retailer, the customer pays half the price at the till, and then the rest in two equal installments over 2 months, no interest. So gently, but definitely moving in to some lending there. Business Day from Stuart Theobald. Banks have reason to gripe over Reserve Bank's dividend block. Yeah, I mean, the big banks have been profitable. It's been a tough year for them, but they're profitable. Remember, the Saab asked them to not pay dividends. Will that be lifted? We'll see results in March. We'll get a sense. Morning markets. US was mixed. S&P down 0.2. Nasdaq up 0.07. Asia mixed, Sydney down 0.2, Tokyo up 0.3. Commodities green across the board, gold 1,783, Rand 1,472. And our opening call, a green open locally, up 60 odd points, that's 0.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kuntz. He's a portfolio manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, morning. Appreciate your time. We had Sibanye results Thursday. True was Thursday, but after the close. That was Friday, therefore. They both traded weak into the results and passed the results. Touch on them separately. I mean, Sibanye, it was knockout results, chunky dividend, debt going away. I mean, is there something to be concerned on how they traded, or is it a case of, you know, really it was that run-up post the update, and you know, stocks done well and looking good?
Yeah, morning, Simon. I don't know if I'd be overly concerned. I mean, these diversified miners and these precious metal plays, and Sibanye being a case in point, I mean, their results were, as you said, an absolute blowout. They're now literally printing cash hand over fist. The question, I guess, you've got, which may be leading into your question, is you know, how much is baked into the price already? Something like a Sibanye, you know, up 14% already year to date. Although saying that, it's only a couple of percent more than the all share. But, I mean, flirting with all-time highs. I guess they're due a little bit of a pause. We've had such a blockbuster start, especially within the sort of commodity space as well. I mean, that's your answer for Sibanye. I just wonder, you know, maybe taking a pause before it continues. True is a slightly different one for me, in the fact that it ran reasonably strong into it. I mean, 26%, yeah, almost 27% up so far this year.
Yeah.
They've certainly turned the business around. I think they're seeing the sort of light at the end of the pandemic tunnel, so to speak. Although I'd still, for me, the question mark remains, certainly within the South African retail space. You know, that the South African retailer, the consumer, is a little bit on the back foot for now. I'd be surprised if there's much more upside for now in this particular share. I think we definitely need some more figures, some more trading updates. Let's see what these guys are doing. Let's see what's like on the ground floor, because I think this might run a little bit ahead of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I take your point. And I mean, you know, as you say, True has done, I mean, they first out the gates with the updates did spectacularly well since then. There certainly are some concerns out there. I mean, the South African consumer was helped last year by, you know, money from government, etc. We need to see how that shakes, I suppose, maybe over the next 6 months until we get another set sort of in July, August.
Exactly. I mean, you want to see now, can the South African consumer sort of stand on his own 2 feet, so to speak, and certainly coming back. I think this year certain things are going to open up. It's going to look a little bit better. True is probably more likely to benefit than most. They do play in that sort of space with the sort of discount clothing, etc. So it might be better fare than most. But once again, as I said, it's I think we need to see the real economic data, not skewed by sort of government handouts and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and maybe if we start going back to work, we're going to need to buy some clothes because my wardrobe's still a year old.
Mine's a little bit tight after it was the year in lockdown.
Yeah, that too, but we won't go down that road. OPEC next week, OPEC Plus, they're already positioning. Saudi Arabia saying, we'll give up some oil, but, you know, no increases. Russia wants to increase. I mean, do we still, I mean, there was a time, you know, way back, even before we were in the markets, where OPEC was a real player. Is it still a player, or is it just sort of headlines these days?
I don't know. I guess for me, I think it is still a bit of a player. I mean, they literally came out a month or so ago, Saudi Arabia, obviously they're the sort of the kingmaker in that space, coming out and saying they're going to take an unprecedented, was it 1 million barrels of oil off the market on top of the real substantial cuts. And you saw how the oil price responded in kind. I mean, up at city near multi-year highs. I guess for me, the problem is, though, how much is speculation? I mean, oil, the most traded commodity in the world. You know, we always look at the open interest every month on those, every week on those commodity or traders reports. And every hedgie, every speculator, every bank you read is now talking about $100 in oil. It always makes me nervous when they start bouncing those numbers off already. I think it is quite influential still. Obviously, what concerns me, though, there's no planes in the sky. There's no the shipping markets are starting to pick up again at the moment. But we're still, as you said, sitting at home and locked on, no one driving. I also think this one might have run a little bit ahead of itself. But I think they're probably going to take – probably going to certainly increase some sort of production. I don't think everyone's talking about inflation, everyone's talking about yield curves, everyone's talking about these commodities. I mean, oil, the biggest component in that commodity basket, you know, oil sitting where it is now, you know, almost $64 a barrel this morning. I think they can afford to sort of loosen the tap, so to speak.
Yeah, I take your point. I can't see the $100. It's just not there. The world is not ready for that. And we're just not using any oil. We're not driving. We're not flying. We're just not using it much at all. We'll leave that there. Nick Kuntz, Portfolio Manager, Sunlam Private Wealth. A question to you this morning, our poll. Does the market response to recent results worry you? Nope, they ran after the updates, which they did. Yes, you're concerned, or maybe some, but not others. You'll find that on our Twitter account at MoneyWeb.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore, while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP. Visit orbvest.com.
Finance Minister Tito Mboweni will deliver his much-awaited 2021 budget to Parliament on Wednesday, the 24th of February. Join MoneyWeb in a free webinar with economists Dr. Iraj Abidian and Isaiah Mhlanga and tax expert Yolandi Esterhazen for a post-budget day analysis on Thursday, the 25th of February at 11 a.m. Go to moneyweb.co.za to register and take part in the conversation.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Henry Brookholm. He is, of course, a fund manager at Anchor Capital. Henry, morning. Appreciate your time. The story that's been actually been bubbling around for a while, the Australian Parliament wanting to pass legislation to force Facebook and Google essentially to pay for linking to news sites. And there's some nuances in terms of Google and the snippets that they use. In the last week, Google started negotiating, starting to pay some money. They'd initially threatened to withdraw from Australia. That wasn't going to happen. We also see Google paying out in France, although France just some 20-odd million dollars. I mean, is this a sort of a big spat in a small teacup? Is it something that, as investors or potential investors, particularly in the case of Google, we should be worried about?
Yeah, you know what I think it is? It's just a continuation of the global regulatory crackdown on mm-hmm. big tech companies, where you've got global governments and businesses trying to claw back the revenue that they've lost to the big tech companies as they've kind of transformed the world. And this is just another example of that taking place. And it happens to be the traditional media sector in Australia this time.
And perhaps it's not a bad way to do it, because this isn't, I mean, Australia threatened rules, but they, you know, the Australian Prime Minister last week was saying, you know what, they quite like that bundle of money you're sending our way. Perhaps we can step aside. This is kind of like, you know, two kids in the playground sorting it out without the teacher having to get involved, and is perhaps a better space and an easier path out for them.
Look, I don't think it's an ideal outcome. I think this is what happens when you don't understand how your own business works. Yeah. I mean, the fact is, when you look at the news, it loses its economic value immediately when mm-hmm. it's disseminated, right? So in the past, when people bought newspapers, they weren't paying for the journalism, if we're honest. They were paying for the printing of the newspapers and the delivery trucks that would bring the newspapers to them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
advertisers were paying for access to those readers. And nobody was paying for the journalism. And the truth is, these mediums were in trouble a long time before Facebook and Google arrived. And the news outlets needed to understand this. And the fact is, they failed to adapt. And that's why this has happened.
And if, I mean, Google is paying out, as I said, some 20-odd million in France, a couple of hundred million in Australia. For me and you, that's a big weekend. For Google, who does 50 million revenue, or for Alphabet, who does 50 million revenue a quarter, I mean, they don't want to see the money flow out, but this doesn't necessarily threaten their business model. But it might open, I mean, Trade Desk, which is a sort of competitor to the Google and Facebook ad business, does that bring up something in Trade Desk, because they're smaller and therefore sort of not being sort of scrutinized, or am I getting ahead of it here?
Look, I just think that this isn't the answer. I mean, if you look at News Corp or some of the other news agencies in Australia that have now signed an agreement with Google, they're actually now more dependent on Google than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And that's now not going to change. I mean, if you look at the New York Times in the US, for example, this is a publication that saw the change coming years ago. They knew that they couldn't compete with the search and the social media giants for ad dollars. So instead, they focused on developing really high quality content that they would ultimately sell via a subscription model. And of course, what happened? Well, you know, ad revenue, as they predicted, has fallen from about $2 billion in 2006 to just over $400 million last year. But they now have 7.5 million monthly subscribers, one third of those of whom were added last year. So they've transformed their business. So this is a failure to transform. And, you know, even if you do sign an agreement with Google as a media house, now your revenue is coming from the very guys that you're blaming for your demise.
Yeah, and I mean, so Facebook shut down sort of all news traffic, which included weather and other things, because they said it was news. They used an algo and it went a bit crazy. But reports are that Australian news sites lost 15 to 20% traffic. I mean, it's just not going to work. I take your point. The Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, that's the way to do. Make the quality and charge accordingly. That's how you're going to win this battle.
Yeah, well, it's going to hurt them more than it's going to hurt Facebook, that's for sure. I mean, Facebook spoke about how they send around 5 billion clicks a year to Australian publishers, which they value at around $400 million. And this is now going to go to zero.
Yeah.
And Facebook understand that by kind of kowtowing to the Australian Competition Commission, you're now setting a dangerous global precedent. And Google, which have now done that, I think are going to pay a fairly heavy price. I mean, this will impact margins.
Yeah, no, it is going to hurt them. Let's quickly take a pivot. I haven't chatted to you, I think not this year yet. Two other pieces of news I wanted to touch on. Uber lost their appeal last week in the UK around employing workers. They are contractors. Sorry, they're workers, not contractors and not employees. Kind of falls in the middle. It's early days. It was only 25 people who had taken this to the UK Supreme Court. This is certainly going to be putting pressure on Uber, although they got the proposition in California, which protects them. But I've always looked at their business model. I don't know. I've never thought of Uber as a massively attractive proposition. What's your take on it?
So my kind of take on the delivery economy stock companies like Uber and some of the other food delivery companies as well is that the economics are a little bit precarious, right? Because it's almost based on the exploitation of a vulnerable class of working people. I mean, if you go to the States and you consider the average Uber driver, it's typically a foreigner who's come to the States to try and create a better life for themselves. And they've become an Uber driver because they don't really have an alternative. And if you look at the living they make, I mean, it's really break even at best. So in an environment where your employees are regulated and you're forced to pay them a good living wage with the associated benefits, all of a sudden the business model becomes economically unviable. And that's why Uber, companies like Uber, have been fighting this so hard. So I think it's just confirmation that, you know, these aren't sound business models. And I think that's what you're saying as well.
Yeah, I hear you. And based on exploitation of the lowest of the population, not going to work. Last one, Amazon, Jeff Bezos leaving. A surprise. He's only 57. He's off to spend time with his billions and billions of dollars. The market, I mean, they've got a replacement. He's an insider. He's been there almost as long as Jeff has. It's always a little scary when founders leave, but now looking at Amazon, this is perhaps not really an issue. I mean, it's going to leave a big hole, but it's he's got a team around him.
Look, he does, and the replacement, Andy Jassy, has been around for a long time. I think with a company as big and as complex as Amazon, you know, succession isn't something that you want to leave until the last minute. That's something that you want to plan well in advance. And of course, we know that a guy like Jeff Bezos will remain heavily involved with the business. So, you know, this is probably how you want to see that succession taking place. I think it's more than just Jeff going off and sailing off into the sunset to spend his billions, although there's certainly there's a component of that. You know, running a company like Amazon really isn't a one-man job. It's a job for 20 people. And this is probably now the Amazon board starting to put that infrastructure into place. So it's what you want to see, really.
Yeah, I mean, he has his S team, and I don't know how many people are in it, but those are the folks essentially running it. He's going to be stepping up as executive chairman, so he's still going to be around. But as you say, a business of that size. And Andrew Jassy, I mean, he got AWS off the ground, and of course, AWS is now their biggest part of the business. We'll leave that there. Henry Brockholm, he's a fund manager at Anchor Capital. Henry, really appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 30. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider, license number 50483. The poll that we put out to you after chatting with Nick Kuntz this morning, we touched on particularly the Sibanye-Stillwater and the Truro's result. But there was also in Billiton, for example, BHP, they now call themselves, who actually responded quite well to those results. I mean, are you worried about the responses? Nope, it ran after updates. Yes, I'm concerned, some but not all. And certainly they have run very hard after those updates. At one point, Truro's was up about a third in just a matter of weeks after they came out first out of the blocks. Wednesday is budget day. I'll be on SAFM immediately after the budget with an expert panel to unpack the budget. Tune in for that. We'll see what Minister Mboweni has to say and how he manages to juggle those numbers. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast available again, website and app, but wherever you get good podcasts, that from 7 o'clock. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Kodora, Nicole, Masekhla. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.